Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's March the 14th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons, this time at the Climbers facility in Indiana. In agricultural news, the president has issued a formal statement in support of a farm bill. Some say an extension is the only viable option left, or a new bill that just looks like an extension. And a new piece of legislation is floating on Capitol Hill that would impose tougher penalties on companies that send downer cattle to slaughter. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then, well, do you think your corn yields have improved above trend line in the last decade because of technology? We'll find out if the data agrees with your answer. That happens later in this program, the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Friday afternoon. Futures in the wheat pit nearby March contract at $11.60, down 74 cents. May off 52.5 at $11.91.5, and July at $11.62, down 51.5 cents. March corn futures at 545.5, down 14.25. May futures at 559.25, down 10.25. And July corn futures at 571.25, down 10.25. December contract at 575, down 8.25. March corn futures next year, 8.5, lower at $5.83. March soybean futures at 1340, down 40 cents. The May futures at 1352.75, down 50. That's the limit lower. July down the limit at 50, lower at 1368.75. And August at 1361, down 45 cents. November soybean settled the day at $12.79, down 41.5 on a Friday. November of next year at $12.37, down 38 for the day. The March bean meal at $336.50, down 16.50. March bean oil at 60 cents even, down 2.1 cents for the day. Live cattle at the Mercantile Exchange, April futures $90.50, 95 cents higher. June futures at $90.95, down 2.5 cents. Feeders trading the March at $99.30 at the end of the day, down 15 cents on the day. And the April's at 57.5 cents higher, finished at 102.50. April lean hogs at 55.02.5, down $2.17.5. Outside markets on this day, trading the crude oil futures at $110.10, down 23 cents a barrel for the nearby April contract. May futures at 108, down $1.17. The CRB index at 416.11, that's down 4.53. And the U.S. dollar is now trading at 71.66, down 0.18 for the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average stands at 11,861. It's just about 278 points lower. And gold futures are $5.90 higher in the nearby March contract at $998.20 an ounce. The April futures at $999.50, up $5.70. And yes, they have gone to over $1,000 today at $1,007.50 for the afternoon. Here's what the forecast looks like from our own Mike Sola for the two-state region. He says tonight in Indiana and northeastern Illinois, it'll be partly cloudy. In northwestern Illinois, it'll be cloudy. Some scattered snow showers, a few flurries will arrive. In southern and central Illinois, mostly cloudy. Some showers arriving in the west. That'll happen during the evening hours and will spread to the east overnight. Lows will range from 25 in northwestern Illinois to 46 in the far south. Tomorrow in the north, Mike says, partly to mostly cloudy. In central Illinois, mostly cloudy. Some scattered areas of light snow and rain. Elsewhere, cloudy, some scattered showers and a few thunderstorms tomorrow, and those will be in the far south. Highs will range from 35 in the northern parts of Illinois to near 50 in the far south. The extended highlights, a slow-moving storm system will bring the likelihood of flooding rain to the area from Sunday through Wednesday of next week. Computer models place the heaviest rain in the Ohio River Valley, where some 4 inches plus totals are possible in some of the models if they happen to verify.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On a Friday afternoon, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. Time to take a look at the futures markets. And Mike Zuzulo, Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, joins us this afternoon. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Todd.
Kind of a rough day in Chicago if you're, well, almost in any of the pits, certainly in the soybean and the wheat pits. But if you look at the numbers for the weekly, not nearly as bad.
No, not at all. You know, for a weekly basis, the corn just stayed fairly strong, you know, up 12 cents on the lead month. And, you know, beans, the only thing that actually lower for May beans in particular, down about a penny. And then the wheat up about 67 cents. And you got to kind of ask yourself, well, what explains that? Well, we got to remember earlier in the week, before really the stuff hit the fan today, that for the week, the gold's up almost 27 bucks an ounce, and the crude's up almost $5 an ounce, and that's on the dollar shrinking about 2.7% for the week. So quite a bit of different trade this week if you take a step back versus the routing the market took today.
Why the routing today, first off?
Well, I think the acreage numbers from Informa, Todd, weren't really that much of a surprise. They didn't lend a lot of bullishness or bearishness to the trade, and it seemed like the focus returned back to the outside markets. Two things in particular, technicals probably were very, very focused on today, and then the outside markets. This is kind of twice in 2 weeks we've had to talk about this on a Friday afternoon. But today, Bear Stearns, one of the largest investment banks out there, secured a loan from J.P. Morgan Chase on fears that they would not have enough money to operate because their share prices dropped and because they've been tied to some hedge fund losses. That loan actually backed up by the Federal Reserve. And the way the Fed did it, they enacted a Depression-era law that allowed them to vote with less than five governors to get that moved right away. So I think that really shocked the market, and it gave the market maybe more credibility to the idea that financial markets are going to get worse before they get better. It gives more credence to the idea that the fall in demand and economic output is going to happen here in the first part of 2008 as we get into the summertime especially. And then there's also talk circulating now and debate going on that the Fed and other central banks are going to come in here and actually physically buy dollars next week to try and prop up the dollar, because the world's so tired of these high energy prices. You can make an argument either way for yes or no, it makes sense to do that. Probably a little bit above our pay grade right now, but that's something the trade's really focusing on, and that gave some of the dollar traders a little bit reason to cover their shorts, and that probably impacted some of the commodity fund mindset too.
You must have, that room when they made the decision to invoke a Depression-era law, they had to be thinking about the perception across the planet when they did that and what that really meant over the long term. Do you think there's a big tail on that one?
Yeah, there is. And you know what you can go back to and why you feel pretty strongly in saying that, or one would feel strongly in saying that, is because you've got about 100% likelihood priced into the Fed futures that next Tuesday, Wednesday, they're going to cut rates by 0.75%. There's now a 50% chance priced into the Fed futures you're going to get a full 1% rate cut by the Fed next week. That just stimulates even more inflationary pressure against all the rest of the major economies around the world. So it would make sense that the Fed definitely did some talking on the phone today before they enacted that, because they probably understood exactly what that was going to mean to the market in terms of reaction in the interest rates. So it's going to be an interesting week, and it kind of sets us up as farmers and hedgers and speculators alike that next week we've got the Fed, and then we come into the acreage report. And I think probably what's going to happen here in the next couple of days is that we're going to focus almost entirely on the outside markets, and then we'll gradually transition back over to the acreage numbers, and focus will turn back in Chicago to what the actual supply for new crop corn, beans, and wheat will be, especially given Informa's numbers. I was shocked that Informa went below the wheat number that USDA gave us and came in at 63.5 million. We actually thought maybe they'd pump up the spring wheat acres and go up towards that 65 million acre level, but they actually came down against USDA. So that's something to really watch for at the end of the month.
And the other numbers that came in, that 87.5 million for corn, that, of course, what, a 6.1 million acre decrease from last year.
Yes.
And then the soybean number was
71.3. Yeah, so you're looking at probably right under a billion bushel for carryover in corn, using about a 155 yield, and you're looking at right around a 150 carryover in beans if you drop your yield down to around 42.1, assuming that some of those double-cropped acres are not going to yield as much, and you're going to have to bring your national yield down some. So the idea in Chicago, it seemed like to us at the end of this week, was supplies are building. And that's one of the things that the USDA report showed us globally, but no one really took note of. And I think maybe the cash market realized that, and the end users realized that, but Chicago maybe kind of didn't take note of it, as we did see increases in global ending stocks across the board pretty much. And we noted today that the Gulf beans basis actually went discount to May futures. That's the first time in about 3 or 4 weeks that the Gulf price the cash market price at the Gulf is actually below the Chicago Board of Trade futures price. I think that paints a pretty clear picture that maybe the demand is starting to slow a little bit, and we're losing some business to South America.
And demand is slowing. Well, it would be the time of the year for soybeans,
right,
certainly, to do that anyway. But
right.
I want to take up one other thing, because you suggested that the trade will probably focus at least a good portion of the next 2 weeks on the outside markets. Much of that, I would think, would focus on the dollar. If the Fed comes in and does, and actually buys dollars and strengthens the dollar, how much of an impact might that have in Chicago? Will that drop prices?
Yeah, I think that probably would be the reaction. Short term, when we went back and looked at other historical times when the Fed has done a coordinated intervention, and once they step in with all the other major central banks, and the Forex traders then realize, okay, is it smarter to take my money off the table here because I don't know how long the Fed and these other central banks are going to keep buying dollars? Yeah, maybe it probably is. I think I'm going to go ahead and flatten myself out here. May not get long the dollar because, you know, when you go ahead and intervene and you physically buy dollars, you're actually taking supply of dollars off the market, and that actually tightens your liquidity up. So that may not be a reason to go ahead and in the open market buy dollars, but it sure would probably give traders a big reason why they'd want to cover their shorts, because the Fed and the other central banks could be intervening for several weeks if they want to. The power of the printing press really takes over, and I think Forex traders realize that. If that's the case and the dollar bounces, that would initiate probably a top in the yen, a top in the euro. That would turn a lot of commodity bulls, you know, quant funds and currency, emerging market fund guys that have been long commodities, probably turn them back into shortening their positions up quite a bit.
You've been long an advocate of making sales and maybe being 100% sold by the time we get to the planting season. I think that's right. Still there, and are you willing to make sales here now?
Yeah, I mean, we're in the mindset we want to classify them as intelligent sales. In other words, I really like the bought puts, given the fact that elevators are starting to constrain cash sales, given the fact we could have some problems getting corn planted in certain areas if our weather pattern doesn't dry out and heat up. What we wrote in our client letter this week, it really sums it up. We really don't look at the puts as a bearish type mindset. We look at them as actually giving the market a chance to recover, but we're giving it a chance to recover based upon weather and supply. So yes, we're still wanting to go ahead and get up to that 100% level in both corn and beans. It's a lot easier to do it in corn right now, a lot harder in beans.
All right, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too, man. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. By the way, we'll take up more of the markets tomorrow morning right here on this station during Commodity Week at 11:30. If you're listening to WHOW out of Clinton, that will air at 8:30, and you can always pick it up off our website. Tonight after 6 o'clock, our guest this week will be Mark Gold of Top Third. That's Commodity Week. You can pick it up off the website at WILLAG.org.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Dave Dickey is here now. He'll have a complete look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Thursday, President George Bush issued a formal statement in support of a farm bill that would, quote, provide agriculture producers with a safety net that better targets benefits and provides funding for emerging priorities. But the president also signaled he is growing impatient with congressional impasse. President Bush says if lawmakers don't come up with a farm bill by April 18th, they should extend the current farm bill for 1 year. The president also reiterated that he will veto any final farm bill that includes a tax increase or does not include reform. Meanwhile, House and Senate farm state lawmakers are taking different approaches to crafting farm bill language. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says he's ready to write a baseline bill with no extra offsets for spending.
The commodity title will be what's in the House passed farm bill. It will have the loan rate increases. It will have all the provisions that we had in the House bill. Long and the short, it'll be basically an extension of the current law for farmers.
On the Senate side, Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin says he's operating under the premise that $10 billion will be made available to the agricultural committees over baseline, but he says funding must be nailed down today.
I started going title by title by title down, and we were making some agreements. I thought we were down from about $14 billion over to maybe $13. We'd come down. I think we'd made some, again, rough general agreements that when I penciled it out added up to roughly about $1 billion. Then we got stuck. Yesterday, it was the will of the House members, Mr. Peterson and Mr. Goodlatte, that we not proceed any further on that tack and that we begin to think about doing a baseline bill.
Jurisdictional squabbles over the farm bill are also continuing. Yesterday, Harkin rejected any Senate Finance Committee jurisdiction over farm bill programs, even if the Finance Committee provides the funding. A bipartisan group of senators introduced legislation yesterday to impose tougher penalties, including permanent closure for companies that send downer cattle to slaughter. The measure would impose fines for first-time offenders. A second offense would result in a one-year suspension of operations, and third-time offenders would be shut down permanently. The vice president of marketing for Syngenta Seeds says as much as 15% of America's corn and soybean acres are still up for grabs. Bruce Hollison says the company is also closely watching what happens to the balance of spring wheat acres. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. You can find that program on our website this evening just after 6 o'clock. It's our weekly look at what happened in the world of agricultural markets. We'll record at 4:30 this afternoon. Top Thirds, Mark Gold is our guest. It's all at willag.org. Sign up to have it downloaded as a podcast or just listen to it right off the website, willag.org. Well, data pushers at the University of Illinois have been looking for the impact of biotechnology on corn and soybean yields. Reports are in, and the numbers say it's not there. We'll hear more next. Agricultural economists at the University of Illinois took the yield and weather numbers from the three I states into their databases. They shook them up and tried to separate the yield boost attributable to weather and that which may have come from biotechnology. The answers from Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa were not what you might expect, says lead researcher Scott Irwin.
What we found was very interesting on corn, that over the last decade, when many observers have credited biotechnology advances with an upward movement in the trend in corn yields, we actually find that better than average weather is the explanation, not better technology.
That is what he said. Better than average weather is responsible for the upward movement in the corn yield trend, not biotechnology. Well, Irwin cautions that the data used covers a long sweep of history, beginning in 1960 and ending in 2007. It may not yet reflect the impact of triple-stack corn varieties introduced last year.
We want to be very careful what the message is out of our research. Basically, we believe our research shows that the yield data to date does not show a substantial impact of these kind of technology-driven increases in corn yields, that we are increasing yields, but at about the same pace as we have in the past. That's what the data through 2007 show on a state level. There is other kinds of evidence from field trials and experiments that indicates that it's possible as we move forward that these, in particular, things like triple stack hybrids on corn might result in a substantial increase in the rate of growth and trend yields. What we're saying is it just hasn't shown up yet in the aggregate data.
What the data does say, thinks Scott Irwin, is that the agricultural community must be careful going forward of not pinning too much hope on the continued strength of biotech corn hybrids in the event of a catastrophic regional weather event, a drought across the entire Midwest. Irwin says, as it happens, the research was done to begin with to better understand the interaction of technology and weather on corn yields in the state of Illinois. The data just happened to hold a unique story as related to the nationwide trend yields. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. You can visit our website at willag.org. Time to take our Friday afternoon look at the cash grain market. And the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Indiana join us this afternoon. Mike Anderson is on the line filling in today for Bruce Foster. Thanks much for doing that, Mike.
Yep, thank you.
Tell me about cash basis in your area.
Well, nearby corn is moving plentifully here before harvest, and basis in our back door is kind of moving the other way on it. We're posted 20 under at the ethanol plant here right now. Most of your train shippers are somewhere a few cents behind that.
And your expectations as we go deeper into the growing season, or I guess the spring and the planting season at this time?
Yeah, I think a lot of guys have sold more corn than they have in the past. I think still think there's corn out there to move, but it does feel like basis will be a little bit better in that April, May, and maybe even June, July time frame. And certainly if you're a processor and don't have any coverage on in August and don't have the storage to get you through August to harvest, then there's going to have to be encouragement for corn to be carried that long as well.
How many processors do you think that are not booked that far out, given the lofty heights we've been at for quite some time?
Oh, gosh. You know, I hesitate to speculate too much. I think there's good coverage on through June, July, and that August has always been kind of a wait-and-see kind of game. And I don't think there's a lot of coverage on out that far just yet.
There's much speculation, and of course the Informa numbers were out today on acreage. What are you hearing in your local area about the split and what farmers are doing?
We are traditionally good corn ground here, and in our backyard a lot of people are probably going to continue to plant corn. There are people who will have a little bit of flexibility and be able to wait to the last minute and make a decision based on what the market is, you know, 2-3 weeks from now. But I think it's fair. I think we are going to see bean acres up in our area from where we saw them last year, and corn is going away.
And finally, what is your bid for the day?
20 under delivered here at Climbers, 5:39 tonight.
We thank you much.
Yep, thank you.
Mike Anderson is at the Climbers facility of the Andersons in Indiana, joining us here on the Closing Market Report to take a look at the cash grain market and filling in for Bruce Bostard, who's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Bruce was away this afternoon. In just 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest and the two-state region. That'll happen with Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
It's National Potato Chip Day. Historians generally give credit for the invention of the potato chip to George Crumb. In the summer of 1853, Crumb worked as a chef at a New York resort. One dinner guest was angry with Crumb's French fries, which he deemed too thick to his liking. Crumb decided to irritate the guest by slicing and deep frying potatoes too thin to be skewered with a fork. but the plan backfired. The guest loved the brown paper-thin potatoes, and the potato chip was born. Crum knew a good thing when he saw it. By 1860, Crum opened his own restaurant that featured a basket of his potato chips on every table. On this day in agricultural history in 1794, Eli Whitney patented the cotton gin. His basic machine made it possible to clean 50 pounds of cotton a day. There is controversy over whether Whitney actually is the inventor. Some historians believe that Whitney's landlord, Catherine Littlefield Green, should get the credit. She reportedly suggested to Whitney the machine's brush-like components, but could not patent the device because women were not eligible to receive patents. Other historians give credit for the invention to Joseph Watkins, who was using a gin on his farm 2 years before Whitney applied for a patent. It was only after Whitney visited Watkins and examined the Watkins gin that Whitney developed his model. And in 1903, President Theodore Roosevelt established the first U.S. National Bird Sanctuary to protect pelicans nesting on Pelican Island near Sebastian, Florida. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Time now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Champaign County, joins us this afternoon. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Boy, it's a beautiful afternoon outside today.
It sure is. This has been one of the nicest weeks we've had probably in almost 2 months. We had, of course, a very wet February. We had a pretty wet January as well, and then with all the cold weather in February. So this week's been a real treat. We had temperatures in the mid-50s to near 60 right now, but hope everybody got a chance to enjoy it this week because it looks like our little honeymoon is over for the time being.
No, well, tell me what it's going to look like when it's rougher.
Well, we're going to be dealing with a little system overnight tonight and tomorrow, which will bring us some rain and maybe some wet snow in areas that won't be amount to anything much. But next week, it looks like we're going to get into a pattern where we're going to be dealing with rain probably from Monday afternoon on through Wednesday, and there could be some heavy rain falling somewhere between I-70 and I-80 here in Illinois, and that could present some problems depending on how fast it comes when in terms of flooding. We still have quite a few rivers and streams that are running a little high, and the soil still saturated. Further north in northern Illinois, ice jams are causing problems on rivers and raising levels there. So a lot of water at once isn't going to be very welcome, but it looks like that's what we're probably going to be dealing with the first half of next week.
Can you quantify a lot of water at once?
Well, I would think that by the time this storm is over with, some areas could see upwards of 2 to close to 3 inches of rain, depending on where exactly the heavier thunderstorms are. In general, I think most of the state will see some significant rainfall next week, a half inch or more, and a lot of areas are going to see a lot more than that.
And then if you look around the Midwest a little farther, for instance, I think they're awfully wet in parts of the northwestern part of Iowa. Is that correct?
Actually, things have been pretty dry from the northern half of the Midwest this month so far. Ohio's been very wet so far in March down through the Ohio Valley and parts of southern Missouri, but Minnesota, northwestern Iowa is actually pretty dry this month so far, and precip through the mid-month, which is today, is running less than half normal for March. So, but that doesn't mean anybody's in bad shape because we did have so much precipitation during the winter months. But it looks like some of that area is going to pick up some good precipitation here over the next week to 10 days.
I stand corrected, and I probably saw a forecast for it being wet.
Yeah, you might have.
Anyway, anything else to add before I let you go for the
day? No, it just looks like there are going to be some significant portions of the central part of the country that are going to get some rain over the next week to 10 days, including some of the dry areas out west and the wheat belt. So keep our fingers crossed and hope those that need the rain get the rain.
All right, Steve, thank you very much.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Champaign County. And that is today's closing market report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 on this station for Commodity Week. If you listen to WHOW out of Clinton, that airs at 8:30 a.m. Our guest will be Mark Gold. If you can't wait, you can always pick it up off the website. Don't forget while you're there to subscribe to our weekend newsletter. It's a really good one. Dave Dickey, your director of ag programming at this station, writes it. And it's absolutely free. Just hit subscribe at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a good afternoon and a great weekend.